Blog Talk Radio.
This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
Good morning, everybody. I am Glenn the Geek from a very wet, very rainy Ocala, Florida.
And I am Lisa Wysocki from Nashville, Tennessee, and you are listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for May 29th, 2012, episode 413. This episode is brought to you by Omega Alpha Equine. Good morning, Horse World.
Good Tuesday morning to you, and I do mean a good Tuesday morning.
Well, if you insist on being accurate about it.
Somebody with perfect comedic timing could produce this much energy in one shot.
You gotta learn that your time in the saddle ain't as rough as the life in between. And the fence isn't there for you to straddle. And you can't change horses in the middle of your dream.
Well, good morning, everybody. Hey, we got, I have a co-host here today that's been on the show before, and we'd like to welcome to the show Lisa Wysocki, who is an author and a good friend of the Horse Radio Network. Good morning, Lisa.
Good morning, everybody. How are you?
Good. You know, we have a little bit of a technical problem here this morning. We're all on our phones calling in today. The internet is not working so well here in Ocala. We had about 10 inches of rain overnight thanks to Tropical Storm Beryl that hit northern Florida. We needed the rain, so it's been nice to see that, but it also has caused a bit of a havoc with our internet working properly. So we're going to get a show out to you as best we can today. And, of course, Lisa, welcome to Technological Problems Tuesday.
Yes, well, you know, I was thinking when I was growing up, I lived in a town that whenever it rained, the electricity went out. So, you know, 40 years later, technology really hasn't brought us all that far.
No, it really hasn't. And that makes me wonder, we live in a development that's full of live oak trees, the huge trees. And,
yeah.
And it's all the wiring's above ground. And I'm going, why when they built this development not 25 years ago, did they not put it below ground? I don't get it. And I hear generators running in the distance, so I'm assuming the power is out to part of the development. So I guess we're lucky we're here at all.
Exactly.
Yeah. So
exactly.
But we'll make do. We'll get through. We have a fun show planned for today. And I can't wait to talk to you. We talked a little bit last week about some of the book projects that you have coming up. And I went, what? Because it doesn't fit your normal writing. So we're going to hear more about that coming up
yeah.
here in a little bit also. But first, let's go to Jennifer and find out what's on today's show.
On today's Crazy Technology Omega Alpha Tuesday edition, I had a hard time with that because it's supposed to be Omega Alpha Monday, but we're doing it on Tuesday today. Glenn and Lisa will attempt to encapsulate the long weekend by covering horsey headlines and equestrian exposés from around the world in mere minutes and following a musical meander to Planet Cowgirl. The velvety voice of Victoria Spicer will grace the airwaves once again with her potentially poignant picks for proactively protecting our horse addictions via video. And for all you late-waking students out there, happy International No Homework Day.
Wow.
She uses all these big words, and then Jamie and I spend the next 10 minutes trying to figure out what the hell she said. So
I was just thinking I really have to wake up to be able to follow that. So thank you, Jen. I mean, I'm awake and pumped and ready to go.
You're a writer, and you even had trouble with that. Now I feel better. I thought it was just me. All right, my daily winning. Well, my daily winning goes out to some new listeners that we got over the last couple of days. Corey, Ann, Roy, and Jill, welcome to the show. We hope you enjoy it. I wanted to remind everybody that you can listen a number of different ways. You can listen on your computer at horsesinthemorning.com. You can listen on your phone if you have a smartphone at horsesinthemorning.mobi, M-O-B-I. You can listen after the show to the recorded version at iTunes. Just search for Horses in the Morning, and it'll be automatically downloaded every day to your phone or your MP3 player, your iPod. So there's a whole bunch of different ways you can listen to the show, and we just are glad you're here at all. Lisa, your turn for a daily visit.
Yeah, I'd like to give a shout-out to my horse friends Bill and Roger and Marion and Anna, who all just recently emailed me that they're listening. So, welcome.
Oh, cool. Very good.
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad to hear it. Welcome, everybody. I want to remind everybody, too, that the chat room is open. You can actually go to blogtalkradio.com, look for the Horses in the Morning on the homepage there, click on it, and you'll find a chat room at the bottom of that page. We also posted a link to it on our Facebook page at Horses in the Morning. So if you want to join the chat room and hop in there, there's usually a few people in there, listeners, chatting away, so you can do that as well. Well, Lisa, I think we have to start the show off with some sad news.
It was a very
sad weekend in many quarters of the horse world, and the first is U.S. team physician and chair of the FEI Medical Council, and a friend to the Horse Radio Network and horse people all over the country, Dr. Craig Farrell, was seriously injured on May 23rd after falling from a horse while playing polo. Apparently, from what I read, he had neck and back injuries, and he died yesterday morning at 9:15 in the morning. He was a super nice guy from down your way, actually, in Nashville area, right?
Yeah, he was. He was a physician at Vanderbilt, and I never had the honor of meeting Dr. Farrell, but I know people who were friends of him and his family, and, you know, everybody said what a fabulous, nice, wonderful gentleman he was, and it's just very sad news.
Yeah, he loved playing polo. Polo was one of the things he loved to do the most. He's an orthopedic surgeon down there. He started a couple of clinics and hospitals and things, so he was well known in that area. And you know, the couple of times I met him at the Helmet Symposium down in Florida. I met him a couple of other times. He's been on our shows. He just was a super, super, super nice guy.
Yeah.
You know, I never had him as a physician, but I can imagine he was the kind of physician that actually took time with you, not one of those rushed ones, because that's just the way he came across. He was fascinated by medicine. And I think that's why he ended up being the team doctor, you know.
I'm sure. You know, it's all about the bedside manner, so to speak. But, you know, he did found the Bone and Joint Clinic there at Vanderbilt, and I've actually been to that clinic, not to see Dr. Farrell, but to see another of the physicians. And, you know, it really is, you know, a great place to be if you have to be at a place like that. And, you know, it's really sad, and I heard that, you know, he fell, his horse stopped kind of funny, and he just went over the front end, and it wasn't, you know, all that sharp a stop. It was just one of those freak accidents, one of those things that just happens sometimes. And, you know, my condolences for sure to the family.
Yeah, and there will be his funeral is going to be held on Thursday, this Thursday, at 2 p.m., and that's going to be at the Cathedral of Incarnation in Nashville. So I know that will be well attended. There'll be a lot of people from Lexington, Kentucky, heading down for that, I am certain.
Yeah.
He was well-liked by everybody at the USEF and over at the Kentucky Horse Park, and
yep,
just so many people. So our
yeah,
best to his family and his friends, and that's a loss certainly for the U.S. equestrian world. On
absolutely,
the side of things, there was a tragic accident over the weekend. This was Natalie and Michael Pollard's competition horses. They apparently were just 5 miles away from their home stable. A groom was hauling the trailer at the time with six horses in it, and the accident was apparently caused by another driver cutting the rig off. And how many times have you and I driven horse trailers? When you're driving down the road, somebody's pulling out from the stop sign, and they don't want to be behind you, so they pull out in front of you, and you're slamming on the brakes. It's happened
yep,
many, many times. And according to the news from the website, the police stated there was nothing the driver could have done to avoid the accident. But apparently, I think from what I understand, the trailer flipped over. There were six horses trapped in the trailer. It had to be cut out of the trailer.
Oh.
5 of the horses were rescued at the time. One of the horses, Ulando, died at the scene. But then, unfortunately, 2 more horses, 2 more of Michael's Olympic Prospect horses, I might add. Icarus, which is a big gray horse that all of us have seen at Kentucky Rolex many times. It was also his, you know, his nickname around the barn was Fly. And then also Jude's Law, which was another horse that he had hoped might take him to the Olympics. Both have died after that. They ended up going to Rude and Riddle Veterinary Hospital for severe lacerations and problems with the injuries from the legs, and they just could not be saved. So the other 3 horses apparently are being treated for injuries, but are expected to recover. There was a statement here on their Facebook page, the Pollard's Facebook page, that said, although we are licking our wounds and are deeply hurt, I also have to be thankful for what we do have. No people were hurt, and we are incredibly fortunate in so many other ways in life. And they went on to with that statement. But this is certainly a tough, tough blow for him and for the whole team over at Pollard Eventing.
Well, I think anybody who loses a horse, you know, and probably most of the listeners have been in that situation, you know, where a horse has had to be put down or a horse has passed away. It's just so tragic anyway. And then to have it happen in an accident like that, it's very, very sad. And to lose 3, it's just mind-boggling, you know, what they're dealing with.
I got it, you know, and I come back to that. How many times have we been driving our horse trailers when people do something stupid and you just don't have the reaction time you do driving your car?
And people don't realize that. You know, when I was training full time, I had a big 6-horse gooseneck rig with a, you know, living quarters in the front, and you know, I had that happen to me a number of times, and I eventually had painted on my back doors, on my back of my trailer doors, caution passing, you know, 64 feet or whatever the length of my rig was, and it's like, we can't stop quickly. And it did give people, I did notice, you know, started passing us a little wider after that and a little more slowly than they had before. But people who just have never driven a horse trailer just don't understand.
Yes, you're absolutely right. Yeah, I know. So, our best also out to the Pollards today, and, you know, what a tough day for the eventing community. Again, boy, and the eventing community has had so many tough things happen over the last year. But, you know, eventers are tough. They come back and
they are tough.
Are always there to ride the next day.
Yeah.
Well, Lisa, let's get on to some happier news. One of your past books is up for a bunch of awards. Tell us about that.
Yeah, The Opium Equation, my equestrian mystery, has won the silver medal for the Mom's Choice Awards for fiction, and that includes all genres of fiction, so that's very exciting. It's also one of 2 finalists in the American Horse Publications Awards, so it's won either, you know, the gold or the silver for that, and I'm going to Williamsburg, Virginia the end of this week to pick up that award and see a lot of my horse friends from various equine and equestrian publications. And then I'm headed to New York for Book Expo America, where I'm picking up an award for the either the gold or the silver for best independent mystery that was published in 2011. So, you know, for my fiction debut, I'm just so excited that the readers are really connecting with this, and it's been so much fun.
Well, congratulations on that.
Thank you.
That's neat. It is cool that, you know, all your hard work has been recognized out there. That's really neat.
Yeah, you know, you throw something out there sometimes and you just, it's so into your head when you're writing and you don't know if other people will get it like you do. And when they do, it's very validating, you know. It's so much fun, and I'm hard at work at the second in the mystery series, and I keep threatening to include some of the horses in the morning crew in the book, and I might just do that.
You keep saying you're going to. Now, I don't want to be the murderer, okay? Can you so I'm not the murderer? That would be bad, probably, for publicity.
That probably would be bad, and really probably wouldn't do much for the listeners either. So, yeah, we'll have to stay away from that.
Yeah, maybe if I could just interview the murderer on the radio or something, that'd be fine.
That's an idea.
Yeah.
That's an idea. We might be able to do that.
Yeah, so, and, you know, Jamie could give him a really rough time, you know, because that's what she does.
Yeah.
So,
yes.
You know, she could throw him under the bus or whatever on the air. But yeah, I'd prefer not to be the murderer.
I'll keep that in mind, Glenn.
Okay, good, thanks. I appreciate it.
Yeah.
Now, you have a couple of other books that you're working on right now that you told me about. And I do,
and you know, I love all my, not all my books, but most of my books today have involved horses, and of course, I just, horses are just my passion, but I've had the opportunity to write with a couple of celebrities, so to speak, and one book is coming out June 5th, next Tuesday, which is a week from today, and it's called Two-Foot Fred, and Fred is actually Fred Gill, and he is a 38-inch tall diastrophic dwarf, meaning he has some physical deformities in addition to the dwarfism, and country music fans might know him as the dwarf who travels with the country music duo Big and Rich. And on stage, Fred is this cartoon character. He wears, you know, a top hat and a feather boa, and he dances and he introduces acts. But off stage, Fred is a really, really successful businessman. And people just don't know that he has, you know, apartment complexes and a text messaging service, and he owns a restaurant and a bar, and has a film and television production company. And it's really all about his struggle living in a smaller body, and it's just a fascinating book. So I'm excited for that to come out next week.
So is this kind of an autobiography of him?
It is, yeah. And I co-authored it with him, and Simon & Schuster's Christian division put it out. It's called Howard Books, and, you know, we're really excited about it because it just goes to show, you know, you look at somebody and you have a perception of them, and then all of a sudden once you get to know that person, they're something completely different.
So the on stage is kind of a character?
It is. Total character.
Yeah.
Total character. You know, but, you know, it was
known for, if I remember right, he's kind of known for being just goofy.
Yeah, absolutely. And he, boy, you get a spreadsheet in front of Fred, and, I mean, he can go to town. And it's just amazing to watch him work. He is really a whiz at numbers and math and seeing the deal and negotiating deals. I mean, he is a pro.
Now, I watched the book, our publishers now have seen to it to want to put together videos, sort of like a trailer for books that are coming out, which
yes.
I don't remember happening, but in the last 10 years that started to really become prominent. And I watched the trailer. I got to tell you, I wasn't sure what I was watching when I watched the trailer.
It's pretty funny. You know, it starts with a scene in the boardroom of the publisher's office, and everybody in the video was actually employed by the publisher except for me. And then it goes into, you know, Fred playing a role of a disgruntled author whose publisher won't publish the book, and, you know, he's gets up on the table and walks down the table to the publisher, and then it goes into this amazing footage of Fred skydiving and chopping down trees, and it's a pretty interesting video. So you can find it on YouTube if anybody's interested
in
watching it. It's pretty funny.
That was Fred in the boardroom, right? See?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
Well, we'll have to put the link to that video on our Facebook page too.
That'd be awesome. Thank you.
It was worth. And Lisa's in there. She's in the boardroom, smiling in the back.
Yep. I'm the one with the brunette net with the eye roll.
Now,
yeah,
you also said you were doing another book, and I went, what? How did
yeah.
you get this next gig?
You know, I have an amazing literary agent by the name of Charlene Martin, who is at Martin Literary Management up in the Seattle area, and she keeps me so busy with writing projects. It's so much fun, and I don't know if any of the listeners watch Dog the Bounty Hunter. It's a reality show on A&E, and it's a family
yeah,
of
sure.
bounty hunters who live in Hawaii, and you know, they catch the bad guys and send them back to jail. And one of the cast on the show is baby Lisa Chapman. She's Dog's daughter, and she's 24. She's going to be 25 on June 10th, and I am co-authoring baby Lisa's autobiography. And it's been just a joy to work with her, and I was really excited because the publisher sent me to Hawaii to work on the book. So that was a lot of fun.
Yeah, that's not a bad gig there, Lisa.
No, it really wasn't. It really wasn't. And I had a great time. It was really productive. And, you know, I told my literary agent that she's now set the bar, so the next time I have to co-write with somebody, we're actually going to have to go to Belize or Cancun or Costa Rica or someplace.
Now, is Lisa the skinny one, the thin one? That's
Yes, she's the thin one, the younger girl, and she's had a really hard life, and I can't disclose a lot of the information at this point, but, I mean, just a horrific life in a lot of ways, and she's come out of it, and just is an amazing young woman. I'm just amazed that she has the strength of character that she has.
You know, it's also amazing that we're doing autobiography on a 24-year-old. That's what struck me.
Yeah. Well, that she has enough to talk about, and she does. Yeah. Yeah, it is phenomenal.
Well, we can't wait to read that one, too. You really
are.
It comes
out in July of 2013. Yeah, so it's been a lot of fun, and you know, I keep writing, and when I get tired of writing for the day, I go out to the barn and, you know, play with my horses and give some riding lessons and some clinics, and so it's great.
Well, now, what kind of horses do you have in the barn right now?
Well, I have Quincy, who is a solid-colored Appaloosa gelding. He was a former dressage and event horse, and he's the kind of horse that really hasn't been out much. He's been in his stall most of his life, so he's the horse that you turn him out in the pasture, which he's out 24/7 now, and he gets a ding on him every single day. He comes back with something. He just doesn't have the life skills that other horses have. So,
they're just ones that are dead set on injuring themselves.
There's always something going on. And he's the nicest, sweetest, kindest horse you could ever imagine. And he just comes up to you and looks at you like, please help me. I just feel so sorry for him. But he's been getting better. I've had him since October, and he's been getting a little better. Now it's maybe like every other day he has something. So there's Quincy, and then there's Tessie, who is a quarter horse Belgian cross, and she was trained by the Amish to drive, and I got her in October too, and she was, you know, one of these dead safe kid broke horses when you get on their back, but she doesn't know anything, so, you know, she knows how to go and turn and stop. So we've been working on leg yields and, you know, transitions and all of that, and she's really intelligent. I'm just amazed. She just retains so well. So she's been a lot of fun, and I've been doing some ground driving clinics with them and some other leadership for women clinics and that type of thing, and they seem to enjoy that. They love the attention.
Cool.
Yeah.
Sounds like you have a happy barn.
I do.
Tennessee.
Yes, they share their space with a walking horse gelding and then a larger pony, older senior female pony who is a lot of fun too.
Cool. Well, I'll tell you what, there's a little guy down in Australia that is making a name for himself. You know, Black Caviar is very popular in Australia right now, the racehorse.
Yeah.
There's a little guy named Roy Skill who's making waves and actually made the Daily Mail down in the UK with this article, and I'll have Jennifer post a link to it on our Facebook page. But he's 2 years old. And he has a miniature pony named Maybelline, and he's a rodeo rider. He actually does barrel racing at the age of two, and he competes with much, much older kids. He's in the 18 and under class, and last week he went out there, and he didn't win, but he was a definite hit, and I know you can see the picture of him in the show notes there. He is the cutest little thing. His belt buckle is probably half the size he is.
Wow.
A great big, huge belt buckle with this huge cowboy hat and this little miniature pony named Maybelline, and he does barrels with them. And he's becoming very popular now in Australia. He's just made all the headlines. And I got to tell you, when you go to this article that Jennifer's going to post on our Facebook page, you're going to see some of the cutest pictures of this little guy with his tongue hanging out, riding his pony, carrying his little saddle along, and he's two.
Can you imagine how great this kid is going to ride when he's 12 and how much he's going to know about horses that we will never, ever imagine?
And can you see his pony? Does he look like a fell-well pony or what?
Oh, my goodness. Yes.
Hairy as could be. So, you know, we would get him on to do an interview, but I'm not sure he talks yet. So that's probably,
probably not. Might have to wait a year or two for that.
But there's
actually
a video on this page, too. You have to watch the video. He's just the cutest little thing. And they call him now Australia's youngest cowboy. So that's an article. That is a nice story after all the sad news we had today.
Yeah.
I just thought I'd throw that one out there. And also, I'll have another news. And I didn't know this, Jen, maybe Jennifer could check in. But did you know that New York is the only state that has outlawed nasal strips? The Flair nasal strips, so that I'll have another who runs with Flair nasal strips, who used to be a sponsor of ours here in the network, and Jim, the guy who started it, is a friend of ours, that in New York, that there any kind of competition from barrel racing to show jumping to polo to flat racing, no matter the breed, does not permit the use of equine nasal strips.
Yeah, I saw that online, and that, you know, you wonder how is that going to affect the Triple Crown outcome this year?
Well, he's saying, O'Neill, the trainer, is saying that they normally, when they warm them up, they don't even use them. So he's thinking that it's not going to be too much of a problem at all. As a matter of fact, they're not giving him any serious workouts from now till the race in 2 weeks.
Yeah, I read that they're just galloping him. And, you know, all the other trainers and all the, you know, the race pundits, they're all just saying, oh, this is just a really bizarre, unusual thing to do before a race. But, you know, he knows his horse, so you have to trust that he's doing what he thinks best.
Yeah, and, you know, I just thought it was fascinating that I didn't know that they didn't allow nasal strips, because they don't really, I mean, I don't know why.
I want somebody from the New York Racing Association to explain to me why.
I know, because they're not like a dog. I mean, it's not, I just don't get that.
Yeah, they should call you, Jen, and explain that.
Yes, they need to.
Yeah.
Okay, somebody out there, New York Racing Association, which is now run by the state of New York, who I'm sure will do such a much better job. Somebody needs to explain that one to me. It doesn't make any sense at all. But then, if memory serves, the FEI also has banned a piece of tack that's used to keep horses from flipping their pallet.
Wow.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, and that's kind of a health risk and a safety risk to me.
Yeah. Well, that's I'll have another. And in case anybody has forgotten that listens to the show on a regular basis, I'm sure that the regular listeners have not. That was my pick.
I'll have another photo finish.
Just wanted to remind everybody of that, in case they've forgotten. So we have that coming up in 2 weeks, so that's going to be exciting. We'll do some more coverage on that over the rest of this week and next week as well, of course. One quick story here before we get on to our guest, hopefully, if she's calling in here. And that is, there was another rescue story, and we have rescue stories all the time in the show, and I try and cover the ones that are a little bit different. Well, we only once in the last year and a half had a rescue story where the horse ended up falling into the basement. Well, now we've had a second. This was in Harriman, Utah, and apparently the horse got, I don't know if they had the horse around the house or what the story was, but the horse got stuck in a basement window well, apparently fell in and got stuck in the window well. Now, you'd have to work. At most of those basement window wells are pretty tiny, so that horse had to work at that. And apparently what they had during the rescue attempt, the horse kicked through the window and fell into the basement, ended up in the basement.
Oh, so, my goodness.
So
how in the world did something like that happen? Oh, my.
It goes back to what we were talking about earlier, what we said on this program a thousand times, is horses will find any way they can to hurt themselves.
Yes.
They just
yes.
look for unique ways to hurt themselves.
Well, that horse had to look pretty hard, I think. Wow.
Well, the fire department was not able to lead the horse up the stairs. He wouldn't go. So they had to dig a trench and remove the window frame and took the hole, basically made a big hole in the side of the house with a big trench, and then they tranquilized the animal, and then they pulled him out through the hole in the side of the house. So this horse probably cost those homeowners thousands of dollars.
Well, I was going to say, you know, try reporting that as a claim on your homeowner's insurance and see what they say.
Yeah, let's see if the fire fire department digging a trench in your yard and cutting a hole in the side of your house is covered. I doubt it. There's applause for that somewhere.
Well, so what kind of horse was this?
I'm trying to read. Doesn't really say. It just says horse. And it's a 26-year-old. They did say that, and that he has some cuts and scrapes, but otherwise he was fine. And that is, you know, 90% of the rescue stories we have about horses, the horse ends up with cuts and scrapes and fine. But they do find clever ways to get themselves into trouble.
They do. Yes, they do.
For sure.
And it's, you know, it just always amazes me what predicaments. I had a cat that got stuck up in a triangle piece of wedging in the rafters the other day, and I had to actually stand on my truck to pull the cat down, and I thought, how in the world did that cat get up there? But, you know, horses are just because of their size, they're so much bigger, and it just is so much more traumatic.
Jamie's cat, rather, out in Arizona, spent most of his day on the house roof. He loves the house roof. So he'll apparently climb on top of the house roof, and that's where he spends most of his day.
You know, I bet he's got a great view, and if there's any breeze out there, it's probably better up there. And, you know, if I were that cat, I'd probably do that too.
That is true. Well, let's take a break for our sponsor for this half an hour, and this show is Omega Alpha, and we'll be right back.
Omega Alpha Pharmaceuticals creates only natural health products. Their scientists, guided by Dr. Gordon Chang, formulate a wide variety of mainly herbal health products to address many equine health problems. And one of their users is international Canadian sensation event rider, Jessica Phoenix. And we have Jessica on here for a second to tell us what she thinks about Omega Alpha. Well, hi, Jess. I hear that you use Omega Alpha.
I do. I love their products. I've started using them this year, and the one product that I really love is Anti-Flam. It just takes the sting out of the horse's feet and keeps them moving comfortably, and I know that from using it in our barn, a lot of horses have benefited from it.
You can look for their products at retailers nationwide or visit their website at omegaalpha.ca. That's omegaalpha.ca.
And, of course, thank you to Omega Alpha for the continued support of Horses in the Morning. They have terrific all-natural supplements. So if you're looking for a supplement that has those natural ingredients to accomplish the goal you want to accomplish, let me tell you, they have dozens of them. You can check them out on their website at omegaalphaequine.com. Well, in just a minute, we're going to be getting a live report from Kat from Draper Therapies, who is at the 2012 Devon Horse Show and Country Fair. She's out there working. I think she's working, but I saw a lot of pictures, Lisa, on her Facebook page. It didn't look like she was working a lot. There was a lot of eating, a lot of watching horse show. So we're going to be she's on the line now. We're going to be catching up with her. I think she's ready. So let's go to Kat from Draper Therapies, who's at the 2012 Devon Horse Show and Country Fair. Good morning, Kat.
Good morning, Glenn. Good morning, Lisa.
Good morning.
Well, now I just threw you under the bus a little bit. Are you supposed to be working there? Because all the pictures I've seen are you eating, watching the horse show. I haven't seen a whole lot of working, Kat.
Well, I am working. I just haven't uploaded those pictures yet. So, you know, bear with me. Require a little bit more to go through, because we're actually Draper Therapies does their Best Foot Forward Award, where we're awarding riders with a positive attitude. So my job is actually to just watch the show, which I know sounds really horrible, and to just watch the riders and reward them with these, you know, great goodie bags and take pictures of them and all that good stuff. So I have.
I love that. What a cool thing to do. That's amazing.
It's been so much fun, and the riders have been so gracious this year. Not that they haven't been in past years, but they're so extraordinary this year. It's just fantastic. I mean, the heat at Devon this year has been ridiculous. Like, it's been 85 to 92, 100% humidity, and as most people know, Devon has no shade whatsoever. So it's been really, really, really warm. So,
tell us about the horse show for those that don't know anything about it. Tell us a little bit about the Devon Horse Show.
Well, Devon Horse Show actually happens in conjunction with the Devon Fair. So it's a nice fair. They have rides, they have games, prizes, all sorts of good fun stuff like that. But the Devon Horse Show itself is a hunter-jumper show. So it's one of the first stops when people start to move from the south more towards, you know, the northeast on their show circuit. And this year they're doing the Olympic show jumping trials this Thursday. And it's just a really great, you see everything from the lead line classes all the way up through carriage driving, therapeutic riding classes, all the way through the high-end Olympic jumping level. So it's actually a great event. There's
pictures
two rings
of the carriage
really...
driving that, yes. It's also the carriage driving from over the weekend, and they size coaches there. There were some beautiful rigs there.
Oh, absolutely. And it's, again, it's from your little minis pulling the carts all the way up through your big boys. So you get a whole mix. And what I love so much about the Devon Horse Show is that they do everything, and it's catering so much to the audience. It might be small because there's only two rings going at any time, but the great thing is you can go, you can walk, you can be a spectator at any point. You can walk through the barns, pet the horses. So it's a really great venue to be really involved with the show itself.
Hey, you know, I've been to Devon not in the last year or so, but a few years back, and it is really an amazing environment, and I really encourage everybody to go just to make plans because it's such a user-friendly, audience-friendly environment. People just have to go once, at least.
Yeah.
Well, I got to know, what's your favorite food, Kat, at Devon?
Well, my favorite food, the funny thing is I saw on Facebook recently, and I've always seen them in past years, but the lemon sticks. I had never been, you know, I guess intrigued to try them until this past year, and oh my gosh, they're the most fantastic thing ever. And for the listeners that are listening in, what they are is they're just a lemon, and the top part of the lemon is actually hollowed out a bit, and they stick a piece of candy in there, and you use it as a straw with the lemon juice, and there's just something amazing that happens, like it's a portable lemonade, and it's so much fun, it's so good, and it's so refreshing when the weather is, you know, as warm as it is this year.
So what are you doing to stay cool?
Exactly.
Yeah. But other than the lemon juice, what else do you do to stay cool? Because I see people going around with these battery-operated fans, you know, right in front of their face. And, I mean, are you doing anything like that?
No, I've been kind of, like, hiding. Not hiding, but there's a very few trees, you know, where Devon is. So it's like you grab yourself a drink and... Honestly, it's been too warm. Usually when it's this warm, I don't eat so much, but I have been, like, looking at everybody who's been eating stuff, and they always put on amazing food, amazing show. The ice cream, that's another thing that's one of my downfalls, is the ice cream has been fantastic. Cake batter being one of my favorites that they've had this year. So
what has stood out for you as far as the competitions are concerned? Is there anything, you know, or do you want to highlight maybe one or two of your winners so far?
Well, we can. You know, it's just fun to talk about more. So, like, this past week, what they're kind of doing is they kind of break it down. So they're going from the younger riders and kind of moving up towards the bigger levels. And earlier in the week, they had a lot of the junior and young riders, and they've had, what do you want to call it? They've had ponies and miniature horses. And one of my favorite classes, actually, and I just missed out. I didn't even pay attention when I walked in, and then all of a sudden I saw all the little kids. But they were doing the lead line classes. And Devon goes over and above any lead line class I've ever watched because the ladies themselves go crazy as far as the outfits are concerned who are leading the ponies and the little riders. And on my Facebook, I actually have pictures of some of the outfits of these women in these stiletto heels going, and they walk the ponies in the arena like that in these fancy outfits. And I admire them because there's some amazing fashion going on. But it was pretty cool to see all that. And everybody, you know, kind of jumped in on my comment section, you know, saying, is this for real? I'm like, it's totally for real. You'd have 30 women pretty much leading the little riders, and their outfits are something to be reckoned with. So.
Wow.
It's the same.
So what are some of the things that the riders have done that makes you want to give them a goodie bag?
Well, the funny thing is we just sit there, we just kind of watch them, and normally, like, I'll just grab a little seat. And what I like doing is actually more so in the warm-up, less so in the show ring, because in the warm-up I find people are going to kind of show them their true selves. You'll kind of see a little bit of who they are as people, how they interact with other riders, how they interact with maybe their coaches or their family and things like that. So we literally, I feel like a stalker sometimes because I sit there, and sometimes I'll sit there for a couple of hours just watching people. But we just sit there and we kind of watch their demeanor. And when it's bright and sunny, it's a little bit misleading because it's not about them smiling, because sometimes in the sun your eyes get squinty and it can be like, you know, you think they're smiling and really they're just squinting to try and see through the sun. But sometimes it's just a gesture that you wouldn't expect them to do, like, you know, really thanking and hugging their grooms and things like that. Or one rider we awarded earlier in the week, she was smiling. She was one of the happiest people I think I've seen in a really long time, just was so happy with what she was doing. It almost reminds, you know, when you started riding when you were probably a little kid and things like that, and the joy you felt of just being around the horses. It had nothing to do with competition. It was just you were happy to be in that moment. And this one girl, you could tell everything she was doing. She was so happy. She went over the crowd. She let them pet her horse. And later, when you actually look carefully, she actually didn't have part of her arm from her elbow up. And you would have never known otherwise. It was completely crazy, but it was so fantastic that she was just the happiest person in the world. And I got a chance to talk to her and her parents. And, you know, I was just saying how amazing she was and, you know, how she got to this point. And they were like, you know, she is just so happy to be here doing this. She's actually got a number of horses in training. And it's been a wonderful affair for her. And I was like, that's so cool to be able to.
That is totally cool.
Yeah.
Did we lose Kat? Are you still there?
I'm still here.
Yeah.
Okay, good. Hey, did I see, too, that you got to go watch some polo?
I'm sorry, what did you say? So I got to watch what?
Did you get to go watch some polo? Did I see you got to do some polo?
I did. That was not with Devin, but we actually, when I used to live down in Maryland, we used to go up every Sunday to Brandywine Polo. And yesterday was actually the start of their season. So my friends, they always do tailgating. They get a big tent going and huge spread of food with flowers and all that. And we got to spend the afternoon watching polo. So when I got done with Devin, that's what I got to do yesterday.
Well, that's fun. That is fun.
That just sounds like a perfect day to me.
Yeah.
Oh, it absolutely was.
There's nothing like tailgating watching polo. I just think it's just so much fun to sit there and watch it. When Jennifer used to be up at Myopia, we used to go watch the polo every Sunday we could, and it was one of my favorite pastimes as a horse husband because it's fast, it's energetic, and it's a little bit violent. So that's perfect for horse husbands. Well, now, Kat, so does Draper set up there? Are you set up there at all?
No, I don't set up there at all, actually. The shops, it's, you know, it's a funny little thing. We typically don't do, like, a vendor setup, if you will, just because it's been really hard. We don't want to compete with our retailers. But what's fun is I get to actually meet and greet people and be more than just a company. We really get to interact with people. And I think that's so much more valuable to us than, you know, setting up and selling stuff. You know, we're really about bridging relationships, so.
Yeah, as a consumer myself, I mean, if I have a relationship with a manufacturer or if I know somebody from the company or if I've met them, I am so much more likely not only to use that company or to that product, but to share it with my friends. So that's super thing that you're doing.
Well, thank you.
Well, Kat, we appreciate you checking in with us today. And now, where are you going to be staying? It runs through, I think, the 4th, doesn't it? Like the 3rd or 4th?
It's the 3rd that it runs through, so they have a lot of big things. I'm actually heading home tomorrow, and tomorrow is one of my favorite days because it's Ladies' Day at Devon, and everybody comes out. They get dressed up. If you're wearing a big hat, you get in for free, I believe, and they're having a tea and kind of sandwiches, a little party for some of the women, and then they're doing a hat judging contest with Carson Kressley, which is always a huge hit. He was the judge last year, so it's... So I would definitely, since I won't be there, I definitely recommend following Devin's Facebook page and looking at them and watching what the hats come out because it's fantastic. You'll see some of the stuff and you'll just be, you know, amazed.
Now, who is that? Usually they have a headline act. Like we saw the Canadian Mounties there one year. They've had the Budweiser Hitch there. They always have like a big headline act. Do you know what this year's is?
I don't know. For some reason, I think it was, there was a Canadian rider. She was really young, and I apologize if I'm completely wrong on this, but I believe she was the one who was doing the bridleless reining demonstration.
Okay.
I think she was who they had this year. I mean, this year, like, they had the Radnor Hunt Hounds, and they had a doggy parade and all that, but as far as, like, the headlining entertainment, I believe she was the one, and you'd have to check Devin's actual website for that one to see who it was. I'm not sure.
All right. Well, cool. Thank you, Kat, for checking in with us. We really appreciate it. And, yeah, you have fun and you're one day left at Devon.
All right. Well, thank you guys so much.
Take care.
Bye.
Okay, bye-bye.
Now you're a little jealous there, Lisa, that of course,
I am totally jealous. I wanted to ask her, like, how long does it take to get there from Nashville? Because I want to go. I do. I just want to scrap everything I'm doing today and go up and have fun. It just sounds great.
Well, you know what? If you get your hat ready, if you left after the show today, you'd probably be there in plenty of time. It'd be
probably,
fun.
Except I have some riding lessons I have to teach, and those kids would be disappointed.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. But you can wear your hat teaching them.
I could.
You can make believe that you're being judged by Kresley.
I've not been there for Hat Day, and I just think that just sounds so cool. And I just adore Carson Kresley. I think he's amazing, so I would love to be there.
Well, that's it's an interesting place, Devin, too, because it's you know, the suburbs grew up around it.
It
used to be in the country. It's not the country anymore, and they put this fair in there. And when you're going there, it's not what I expected, because most of the time you see fairgrounds are sort of outside town, and, you know, there's no town around it, but that's not the way it is at Devon. It's a little bit different.
And, you know, they started this show, over 100 years ago, so, you know, it's changed and grown so much, and as you said, the neighborhood has just kind of grown up around it, and as she said, there's no shade, so it's an interesting combination of things.
And they have these little tiny, the vendors are in these little tiny houses and shops, you know, they're all these little tiny buildings, and it's kind of neat how it's set up. It does remind you of a horse show setting as it would have been 100 years ago.
It really does. And they have so many cool things that are set up for people who just come to watch that, you know, as I said earlier, I just think everybody should go and experience it. It's just a great little vacation to go. And have to find a hat for next year, maybe.
There you go. Well, let's take a break for our song today, and our song is Life on Planet Cowgirl with Templeton Thompson, and we'll be back. We got the European Report coming up, and also, I got to tell you about a new show, or a new host that hosted her first show last week, so we'll tell you about that in just a minute as well. But first, Templeton Thompson, Life on Planet Cowgirl.
Dreaming big and working hard and having faith, making sure you make the most of every breath you take, and knowing that today ain't just another day going by. And it's living every moment in the here and now, knowing that there's blue skies back behind the clouds. Never saying never, 'cause that just ain't how you ride. That's life on Planet Cowgirl. I'm grateful every day that I get to call. Planet Cowgirl. Yeah.
Well, that was Life on Planet Cowgirl by everybody's favorite cowgirl, Templeton Thompson. She lives down your way. Do you know Templeton?
Oh, I do, absolutely. She is a wonderful person and so sweet, and I just love her voice. I mean, she's just so got such a smooth voice, and she's a great songwriter, too.
Yeah, she is, definitely. And as you said, I can't say it enough, one of the nicest people you ever meet. She really is.
And, you know, she's one of these people who's never met a stranger, and she just genuinely loves people. And I'm just so excited for her because she's really gotten a lot of long overdue recognition recently, and I'm just happy for her.
You know, they say it takes a while in the music industry, and Templeton has been doing this for a long time, and she does deserve a break, and I hope she makes it big in that world, and, you know, she certainly works hard at it. One of the things about Templeton, and she's been on the show a number of times and actually co-hosted the show, is she has what I call cowgirl speak, and some of it I just don't understand. And you know exactly what I'm talking about, too.
Oh, I do, you know, and there are some people from certain parts of the country, and I won't name which parts, but, you know, you really have to listen carefully to kind of figure it out, and unless you grew up there, you'll never figure it out.
That's right. That's true. That's very true. Well, you're listening to Horses in the Morning. I'm Glenn Geek, and I am here with Lisa Weissach. He was filling in for Jamie today. Jamie is off in Spain. We posted some pictures of her and her Andalusians on Horses in the Morning's Facebook page. You can check them out there. So if you want to see pictures of some of the things she's up to over there, she's been faithfully posting, and she's looking very, very happy riding Andalusians. I don't know why, but she is.
Really? Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you know, who cares? But anyway, she's over there doing that, and we're posting pictures, so you can find those on our Facebook page. Also, this show is brought to you by Omega Alpha, OmegaAlphaEquine.com. When Jennifer's heading off, we'll talk to her at the after our next guest, but she's heading off for some excitement today that we'll talk about on the show tomorrow, so we'll mention that in a minute. But first, our highlight show for the Horse Radio Network is the Eventing Radio Show, episode 197, that came out the end of last week. And it was the first one that was hosted by the new host of the Eventing Radio Show, Samantha Clark. And, of course, Samantha used to be my co-host on the 2010 radio show. And she also writes for Eventing Nation, and she's taking over the reins of the Eventing Radio Show. And I was on that show to welcome her as one of the new co-hosts, and we found out a little bit about Samantha's past, things I didn't even know, and I've known her for years. So if you want to hear a little bit from the new host of the Eventing Radio Show, you can go to eventingradio.com. Well, in just a minute, we're going to have Victoria Spicer with her lovely voice from Horse and Country TV and the European Report. But we have a minute or two. I wanted to ask you, so now when you do lessons, what are you doing? Beginners? What do you do mostly?
I do everything, and, you know, my approach is a little bit different because I really try to get the rider to figure out why the horse is behaving the way they are. So I really want the rider, in addition to learning about equitation and horsemanship, to understand the horse's mind and why is the horse dropping his shoulder, you know, going around the corner? Is it a pain issue? Is it a behavior issue? Is it something you're doing or not doing? So I really get the rider to work through it on their own, and I kind of guide them through that.
English, Western, both?
English and Western, both, and beginner through advanced. And, of course, I still teach a lot of, you know, riding in the therapeutic world and the equine-assisted activities and therapies. I'm a certified PATH instructor, so I do some of that. And it's just so much fun for me to watch people grow. You learn so much about yourself when you ride, and I get so excited about that.
Yes, yeah, you do. And you've seen it too, but you must, I imagine that you're, we've had you do tips for the shows on various times over the thing, and I imagine that you're a very good instructor.
Well, I don't know about that, but I try to get the rider to learn to think for themselves, and I've taken lessons from instructors who, you know, say, do this, do that, do the other thing, and I have no concept why I'm doing that. So I want the rider to eventually not need me. I want them to be, and everybody needs a riding instructor, but I want the rider to be able to reason for themselves and to think things through, and it's fun when that happens.
And isn't it cool, too, when everybody learns at a different rate?
Yeah.
And, you know, they all learn to think for themselves at a different rate, but you as an instructor can really see that light bulb come on when it finally hits, when that light bulb does come on. And it finally hits them. It is so satisfying for the instructor.
It really is. It really is. And, you know, we bring the horse in as a partner with this, and sometimes just a change in a horse for a specific lesson for a specific thing makes all the difference in the world. And it's fun to be able to say, well, if we use this saddle or if we change to this kind of rein or if we use this horse, you know, what can we accomplish? And it's very exciting to me. And then when the rider then takes what they've learned in the horse world and then takes it to their human relationships, I just love that.
Do you find that there's some people who can take it from the horse world to human relationships, and there's some that just can't?
Some
that are better with the horses and are never going to be that way with people?
Absolutely, and there are some that are never going to get it with horses either. It's just not in them, and we all have skills and we all have strengths and weaknesses, and you know, as an instructor, you just have to figure out how to best get the rider to progress forward, and it's not always, it's like when I work with the horse, it's not always what I want to do. I have to bring the horse in as a partner. Well, when I'm teaching, it's not all what I think they need to know. It's a partnership with them and the horse too. So, but some are never going to progress past a certain level. It's just like me with math. I'm never going to progress past like ninth grade algebra. That's it for me.
And you know what? That seems to be if you're gonna do a stereotype for horse girls, it's they can't do math.
Yeah, I know.
There's exceptions to that, but most of them seem to be English or art and not math.
It's something about the brain. It's like the artist's brain, and Templeton Thompson is one of the exceptions to this. But, you know, a lot of artists, musical artists, tend to have kind of scatterbrains and because they're such a creative genius. And I think you're right. It's with the horses and the math thing. It doesn't cohabitate well together.
Right. There's one. Is there one thing, you know, when you're teaching, whether it's beginners or advanced or whatever, is there one thing that, one hump that you find is the hardest to get over? Is there one thing you can nail down that you're going to see in almost every rider?
Pretty much. I mean, on the beginning level, it's the posting trot or the rising trot. You know, once they get that, they get a lot. But on a more intermediate or advanced level, it's really seeing the world and thinking through things from the horse's perspective. You know, what does the horse see when you're riding him? Can your horse see your facial expressions? Can your horse see you move your foot? Can your horse hear you muttering under your breath and all of that? So once they try and experience the lesson from the horse's perspective or the ride from the horse's perspective, and they get that and it starts to come just instinctively, that just brings a rider automatically up about 10 notches.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Well, I just want to let you know that Victoria has called in here a couple times from England and apparently had bad connections. Jennifer, is she going to be giving us a call? I think she's trying to give us a call back. We're going to see if we can get a better connection. Apparently the technology problems are continuing here today.
Yeah.
We'll see if we can get Victoria on here. It was a little bit of a better connection.
Yeah,
so
you know,
people,
if we've got just a minute, I came across something over the weekend that's really fascinating to me.
Go ahead.
Horse Science put out a report about the zebra stripes. Have you guys heard about this? About the zebra stripes and flies?
No.
That that the zebra developed its stripes over hundreds or thousands of years to ward off flies. So that they've done studies on the vertical stripes, and flies are attracted to horizontal stripes, but they repel from vertical stripes. So that zebras have like fewer fly problems than horses do. So is that interesting? So now I'm thinking, how long is it going to take for a blanket manufacturer to come up with a vertically striped, zebra-striped blanket? And I know that there are some out there, but I don't know that the consumer is buying them.
Well, you know what? See, you and I think differently. You were thinking blanket, and I was thinking, how can I paint my horse?
See, there you go. There you go. And, you know, they have those brindle horses now. Yeah, have you seen those brindle horses that kind of have the vertical striping in their coat pattern?
Right.
So now I'm thinking, well, I probably need one of those, and that way I don't have to get, like, fly spray.
Well, I think we actually have Victoria on here. Let's go to her before her connection craps out again. This is Victoria Spicer of Horse and Country TV, all the way from England. Good morning, or good afternoon, Victoria.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
I'm so glad.
I've made it.
So what's going on over there in England?
Well, we're in the midst of a heat wave, which is probably just normal weather for at least for Jamie. But over here, we've just had a week of very hot sunshine, and nobody knows what to do. It's not situation normal for Britain.
It's not raining. It's not chilly. It's not any of that. Did you get a suntan?
Yes, I was out filming at Highton Horse Trials all weekend, which is one of the big three-star competitions here, and I got sunburn all down my arm. So I've been injured in the pursuit of equestrian action.
Now, the rain stopped, so that's good news.
Yes, indeed. After badminton got cancelled just over a month ago, and now we're in the middle of a heat wave, and the ground's drying out, so it's quite bizarre. 4 weeks later, and it's gone from one extreme to the other.
Right.
Wow.
Well, tell us, now you also, we reported a little bit on this last week. I don't know where it happened, though. Zara Phillips got to carry the Olympic torch on horseback.
She did indeed, with her former former World Equestrian Games partner Toy Town, who was retired last year, and they rode at Cheltenham Racecourse, and which is the sort of home of jump racing in Britain, and they got to take it on one of the legs of this procession. So a great honour, and I think the crowds were 10 deep to see Zara, so it was a great day.
Well, that's terrific. Yeah, she's fun too. Now, you've met Zara. Have you ever done a story with her?
We haven't done any filming with Zara. I've been at the same events as her, and I've seen her launch her clothing line. But no, I haven't ever interviewed Zara. But she seems a very nice, down to earth girl.
All right, now be honest. Do you own some of her clothing?
I don't, I'm afraid. But yeah, maybe Muster would like to give me some, but no, I don't own any, I'm afraid.
Okay. All right, Victoria's looking for donations, though, Zara. She will wear your clothing if you donate it to her. That's.
I will.
Right.
I'm
trying
true.
To help you out there, Victoria. And also, you had a video about horses recognizing their owners. Tell us about that.
We've got a news story. Basically, a university over here in Britain has done some research and discovered that horses not only recognize their owners by their faces, but also the sound of their voices. And, you know, it was getting quite a lot of coverage in the newspapers. And the general consensus from the Horse and Country Facebook fans is, why did they waste all that money on research? They could have just asked any horse owner and they would have said, yes, horses do recognize you. I think mine recognizes me most when I'm carrying his feed. When I don't have his feed, I think he pretends not to know who I am. But
now, I think there would be a lot of, Lisa, don't you think there'd be a lot of horse owners who would argue that their horse doesn't recognize them? I don't know. Go ahead.
That study aside, I think every cool study that comes out in the horse world comes from England, though. I've been noticing that. this is the exception, though, but you guys are doing some pretty good stuff over there.
Either that, or they just like spending money on surveys that we are studies that we already know the answer to.
It could be that, too.
Definitely. I think having such a big racing industry here definitely helps, because a lot of money is put into to research and very valuable kind of veterinary useful research, rather than look horse, recognize his owner, which is possibly from the department of the rather obvious.
I got to tell you, though, I went out to Beaker the other day to catch him, and I had my sunglasses and a hat I don't usually wear on, and he would not let me. And normally he comes right up to me. He would not let me catch him. It was 15 minutes, so he didn't recognize me that day. Apparently, this particular pair of sunglasses, I was definitely incognito that day. So maybe
you know what? I think that's this is my take on it. I think he recognized you, but because he couldn't see your eyes, he was a little bit nervous.
Well, that could be. Yeah, that could be, because he wouldn't get near me. Not at all.
I think you should submit a paper to one of the leading universities in America and say that you've discovered that horses can recognize you, but they're also very gullible and will fall for the most basic of disguises.
I could probably get $100,000 for that grant right there.
You could.
You could.
Thank you.
You might get in trouble if you start lurking around fields, you know, in a variety of disguises, trying to find out whether horses recognize you or not. I think some owners might be a little bit worried.
Well, now, we didn't have you on last week. Are there any new Olympic updates? What's the latest?
Well, when we were at Houghton, we caught up with Yogi Breisner, who is the performance manager of the British team. So he talked us through a little bit about the selection process and when they're going to be announcing the British team. So you can check out that video on our website. And we also bumped into Alice LaCour, who is the eventing manager. So he is in charge of the entire competition from kind of logistics side. And both him and Yogi were telling us that the stadium is getting bigger and bigger by days, and it's going to be absolutely huge. So very, very jealous of all the people who have tickets and will get to be in that stadium, because it sounds really special.
Now, there were tickets here a couple of weeks ago. They had released another batch of tickets. I assume they sold out in about 2 minutes.
I think they did. I did. I follow a girl from the Olympics on Twitter who said, you know, tickets are available in lots of sports, including equestrian. And about 10 seconds later, Horse and Hound magazine tweeted, there are no equestrian tickets left. So I'm not sure whether it was false information or if they just went so quickly that there was none left. But, yeah, I tried again to buy some, and I still don't have any tickets.
Now, your friend Jenny, who we talked to, that's Jenny we've had on the show here before, right? Yeah.
Yes, you have.
She did a video as well, right, about the Olympics.
Yeah, so she's written a blog this week. We've been doing quite a lot of filming recently because it's the Queen's Diamond Jubilee year. So there's been lots of celebrations. There was a big pageant of the horse at Windsor Horse Show a few weeks ago. There's going to be a big parade to central London next week to mark her 60 years on the throne. But part of the other side of it, we've been filming equestrianism in the city. And so Jenny went along with me, and we visited some inner city riding schools and just saw some incredible places. There's a riding school called the Ebony Riding Club, which opens up equestrianism to children in quite a poor area of London. And so we went to this beautiful stable yard in the middle of the city with a lovely arena and a little turnout paddock, and it was surrounded by high-rise tower blocks. So amazing to see, really.
Huh. That's interesting. You know, we've talked to people from New York City, and there's just not a lot of, I think there's one stables left in New York City anymore, and that's it. You know, that the big cities, you're seeing them close up, and I guess they're too expensive.
It's definitely like that in London. There's hardly any left, but this one lady had grown up riding in London, and she saw riding schools closing down, and she thought, you know, why can't these local children have access to riding lessons? And so they get a half-hour lesson for a really small amount. It's about £9 a lesson, which normally it would be five times that in the capital at least. And It gives children from quite deprived homes the chance to get to know horses, and just the joy that they experience and the break from their kind of daily lives. It's just such a special place. It was wonderful to go and find out a little bit more.
Oh, that's great. That's great. It's too bad, you know, that more people can't do that, more big cities can't have something like that.
Absolutely.
Well, now, also, so tell us, you know, for those of us in the United States, how can we see the programming on Horse and Country TV?
Well, a lot of our programs are available on our website at horseandcountry.tv/video. You can see lots of short clips and full-length programs. This week we've got a really exciting premiere of our documentary, Carl and Charlotte Dressage Superstars, which is all about Carl Hester and Charlotte Dujardin, who are hopefully among the favourites for a medal at Greenwich. So we'll let you know if that's available to watch online in the near future.
All right, terrific. Well, thank you so much, Victoria, for being so diligent in trying to get through to us this morning.
My pleasure.
We appreciate it. We'll talk to you again next week. Thanks, Victoria.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Isn't she fun?
Yeah.
She's
yeah.
Fun.
Wow.
She's
there's
so
many cool horse things going on all over the world. You know, it's just I just want to go to all of them.
I know. We're the same way. And, you know, especially England right now, it's such an exciting time over there. They've got the Jubilee and the Olympics going on at the same time. And I do have an announcement to make here. We're going to be sharing a little bit of the fun of the Jubilee and with somebody who was there for that big celebration a couple weeks ago that we talked about. I just confirmed this yesterday. Debbie Laux, who is Monty Roberts' daughter, will be co-hosting the show next Tuesday, a week from today. And Monty's going to be coming on. He was there. He was honored as one of the top, I think it was like one of the top three equestrians in the world by the Queen. And the Queen is actually giving out some awards, I think, here coming up shortly. We'll find out more about that, too, to some of Monty's students in some faraway countries that are learning a better way to train horses. So we're going to have Debbie on as co-host next week, and Monty will be joining us for a little bit to tell us about his adventures in England with the Queen over the past couple of weeks. He has helped with the Queen's horses over the last many years, and the Queen has really grown fond of Monty. And he has some when you're sitting with him alone, sometimes he does have some stories to tell. He loves the Queen's horses and loves being over there, and they love him too. So we'll get to hear some of that next Tuesday. We're very excited to have him on.
Well, I'm excited to hear about that. Debbie and Monty are great people, and I had a press release that came through that said that he was going over there for this just recently, and I thought, wow, I'd just love to hear about, you know, his experiences there. And look, here it is right here on Horses in the Morning. I'm so excited.
Well, yep, you'll hear it right here. And you know Debbie, you've met her, and she is just one of the most lovely people, one of the friendliest people, and, you know, a good friend of the network. She comes on anytime we ask her to, and she's getting up at 6 in the morning, or actually 5 in the morning to do this, because they're out in California, and I said, are we going to be able to get Monty up that early? And she said, oh, are you kidding? So Monty's still an early riser, and he's in his mid-70s by now.
Yeah,
it would have
to be. But he, you know, I get all of his newsletters and I talk to Debbie occasionally and you know, he's just doing great. And I think, you know, people like Monty and Jack Brainerd and some of these other people who are, you know, in their 70s and 80s and 90s and just keep going, you know, that keeps you healthy.
Yes, it does. That's for sure. Well, we are going to wrap up the show a little bit early today. We're hoping that we can fix some of the technological problems. Actually, I don't think we can fix any of the problems we had today. We just have to wait for them to be fixed. So that's a little bit different story. But Lisa, thank you so much. Tell everybody where they can find more about your books, where they can find your books, and more about you.
Yeah, well, thank you. My website is Lisa Wysocki, that's WYSOCKY.com. You can find me on Facebook at Power of a Whisper. I'm on Twitter at Lisa Wysocki. My books should be in stores and online everywhere. And, you know, I'm just so glad everybody just has read some. I bump into readers every day, and it's just so exciting for me. So thank you, guys.
And it's Wysocki. It's W-Y-S-O-C-K-Y. Now, let me ask you, when you started your authoring career, most authors would have changed their name to Lisa Martin or Lisa Good.
Oh, yeah.
You
know, I debated that, but here, you know, I, like a lot of people, have trouble finding authors sometimes, and I thought, okay, if the authors are alphabetical, all you have to do is go to the end of the line, and there I am. So
yeah,
I just thought that would be so much easier. Not that the people can't spell it, but all you have to do is go to the end of the alphabetical thing, and I'll be there. Hopefully.
Most people want to change their names to starting with AA so that they're at the beginning.
Yeah, but see, there's a crowd up there. There's a lot of competition for those people. I'm just going to be down here, so that way you don't get bumped around and when you're looking for me.
I highly recommend her book. She has some terrific books out there, and you can find them all at her website, lisawysocki.com. Thank you so much, Lisa, for joining us today. We really appreciate it.
Oh, thank you. It's been so much fun. So much fun. Thank you for having me.
And we'll be back tomorrow. Actually, Tammy Sarant of the Western Radio Show, a little Australian Southern girl, is joining me as co-host tomorrow. So we'll be getting some y'alls into the conversation tomorrow. and then we have a bunch more co-hosts scheduled for the 2 weeks that Jamie's out riding horses in Spain, and we know that she's having a good time over there as well. Well, thank you, Lisa. Say goodbye to everybody.
Bye, everybody.
All right, and as Jamie would say, stay, neuter, and geld. And as I would say, I'll have another.